Members, please indicate their presence by voting. Clerk, please lock the roll and tally the board.
30 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. The invocation today is given by Pastor Cordell Reiner of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Will all people please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. My Father, it is with joy, thanksgiving, and praise that I come to you this morning. Thank you for your mercy that has allowed us to awaken to a day of service for our fellow Alaskans. As we witness the beautiful comet that flashes through our sky, we're reminded of your mighty works of creation, and may we also be aware of your ability to work through us. As this day begins, may we do service that you would be pleased with. As you have been long-suffering, merciful, and forgiving, and patient with us, help us, we pray, to be the same with each other. You've told us that if any of us lacks wisdom, just ask, and you will give generously and without reproach. May we avail ourselves of this offer, and when this day ends, may we have the peace, contentment that comes from knowing we did our best. Help each of us to be true to ourselves and to each other, that you may receive the glory. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor Reiner. Representative Ivan, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Kelly.
Madam Speaker, I just wanted to test out my new microphone. This is great. Thank you.
Representative Hudson.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to the prayer be spread across the journal.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representative Nicolai has been previously excused from the call of the House today.
Representative Nicolai will be shown as excused. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 82nd, 83rd, and 84th legislative days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals, as certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, the House journals stand approved. Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Foster.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to introduce somebody from the hillside in Nome. A dear friend, longtime Nomeite, head of the food bank in Western Alaska, and he's opening up some other substations in Sylvan and Gamble and some other villages there out of Nome. And the head of the Nome Community Center, Doug McCoy, in the gallery behind me, if you'll please help me welcome him to Juneau.
Further guests for introduction? Representative James.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It gives me great pleasure today. In the Taylor Gallery is my granddaughter here visiting from Portland, and she's been in here since Thursday night, and I think she brought the weather with her because this is the way it was when she was at home. So if she would stand, I would ask everyone to welcome her here tonight. Jennifer Booner.
Further guests for introduction, Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have an honor of introducing to the body one of my constituents down from the neighborhood of Mountain View. And she's here being active with the Alaska Youth and Parent Foundation and the Alaska Food Coalition. Would the members of this body please, she's in the Taylor Gallery, and would everybody please give her a good welcome, Suzanne Smith.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
A message dated April 4th stating the Senate has passed CS for Senate Bill 64, financed by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Shuyak Island State Park, and it's transmitted for consideration.
That will be referred to the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees?
The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 19, Sport Fishing Guides, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 19, Resources, with a new title, recommending do pass Dyson, Williams, Green, do not pass Barnes, no recommendation, Ogun, Hudson, and Jewell. The report was signed by Ogun and Hudson co-chairs. House Bill 19 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 212, Local Option Boundaries for Villages, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending due pass, Dyson and Kukesh, no recommendation, Ogun, Ryan, and Ivan. The report was signed by Ivan Chair. House Bill 212 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 214, Workers' Comp, Temporary Assistance, Medical Condition, recommending due pass, Caldery, Sanders, Kabina, Ryan, Hudson, Rokeberg. 4-0 fiscal notes were attached. The report was signed by Rokeberg Chair. House Bill 214 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 16, Resources Amended, Reformed the Endangered Species Act, recommending due pass, Dyson, Williams, Green, Ogun, Barnes, Massett, Hudson, and Jewell. The report was signed by Ogun and Hudson co-chairs. CSSJR 16, Resources Amended, has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 20, Rules Amended, Modify Federal Wetlands Program for Alaska Needs, recommending due pass, Dyson, Green, Barnes, Massett, Ogun, Hudson, Jewell. Note, the report was signed by Ogun and Hudson co-chairs. CSSJR 20, Rules Amended, has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
The House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs has considered Senate Joint Resolution 22, Alaska Military Bases, recommending due pass, Cott, Ryan, Mulder, Massett, Foster. No recommendation, Jewell. The report was signed by Massett Chair. SJR 22 has a further referral to the State Affairs Committee. I have no further special committee reports.
Citations or resolutions for introduction?
Citation honoring D.D. John Rowe by Representative Massett, honoring Alaska Works Partnership by Representatives Dyson and Sanders, honoring Seawolf Speech and Debate Team, University of Alaska Anchorage by Senator Ellis. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Bills today for introduction.
House Bill 236 by the House Finance Committee by request entitled an act giving notice of and approving a lease purchase agreement by the Department of Administration for an office building in Anchorage relating to the financing of the lease purchase agreement and providing for an effective date.
We refer to the Finance Committee.
House Bill 237 by the House Labor and Commerce Committee by request entitled an act relating to payment of minimum wages to tipped employees and providing for an effective date.
Then be referred to the Labor and Commerce Committee. I'll stand at ease. Clerk, have further bills for introduction?
No, Madam Speaker.
This brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. The clerk, please read the first item on today's calendar.
House Bill 119 by Representatives Hodgins, Green, and Croft entitled an act raising the limit on small claims action to $10,000 and providing for an effective date. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 119 Judiciary with the new title, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending due pass, Croft, Roper, Porter, Green, James, Bundy, and Berkowitz. The report was signed by Green Chair. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
So Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move to ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for HB 119 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for 119 Judiciary with a new title be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. The clerk, please read the title.
CS for House Bill 119 Judiciary by the House Judiciary Committee entitled an act raising the limit on small claims action to $7,500, amending Rule 9, Alaska Rules of Administration, and providing for an effective date.
Under debate, Representative Hodgins.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill simply raises the limits of small claims court from $5,000 to a $7,500 limit. It also puts in a two-tiered fee system. If the existing fee now for small claims is $25 to file, and that will maintain to a level of $2,500, anything over $2,500 will then require a $50 fee. And I certainly don't have any problems with that, and I would hope that the people would remember in this body that the small claims court system is actually the one where the man on the street can go in and get some relief for by himself without having to go through the procedures of a full-blown court. So with that, I would ask people to vote yes on this. Thank you.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. To the representative that just spoke, I'll let him finish off a cripple here. I have some questions that I like the bill, but I noticed the original bill had a $10,000 limit, and now we're talking about $7,500. I want to know what legal peculiarity exists that we then drop down to $7,500.
Representative Hodgins?
Yes, to the representative from Sitka. The administration felt that the $7,500 amount was more suitable and urged me to hold off for 2 years to go to a $10,000 limit, and that they just felt that if we went to a $10,000 limit now, that there would be the possibility of additional training for their magistrates, and they felt that $7,500 was more in keeping with the cost of living index since last time it gone up. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I guess I would stand up in support of the bill. I do note that we've looked at the cost of living and how the cost of living is raised has risen since the last time the limit was risen. It used to be $2,000 and it went up to $5,000, and I think that was back in '86. And since then, the cost of living has been up about 35%. And so since we're doing this for the court system and recognizing inflation rates and stuff, I'm sure that we're looking into doing it also for the school foundation program. And I look forward when we do that real quickly. Thank you.
Further debate? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt House Bill 119? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so House Bill 119 passes the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on CS for HB 119 Judiciary be considered the roll call vote on the court rule.
Without objection, the court rule changes are adopted. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Oh, there's also an effective date, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would correspondingly move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on HB 119 Judiciary be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for Senate Bill 14 Judiciary by the Senate Judiciary Committee entitled An Act Relating to Insurance Covering an insured who is a victim of domestic violence and requiring certain disclosures by an insurer. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass Sanders, Bryce, Ryan, Hudson, and Rokeberg. No recommendation, Calgary. The report was signed by Rokeberg Chair. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that CS for SB 14 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title?
CS for Senate Bill 14 Judiciary by the Senate Judiciary Committee entitled An Act Relating to Insurance Covering an Insured Who is a Victim of Domestic Violence and Requiring Certain Disclosures by an Insurer.
Representative Rokeberg?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's a privilege to be able to carry this bill today on a subject and topic that affects many people in the state of Alaska. In terms of the topic of domestic violence. However, I'm pleased to report that there has been no instances of any discrimination on the part of the insurance industry for this reason in the state, which is something to be very pleased with, Madam Speaker. However, this bill is preemptive in that sense. We don't want to be able to be put in a position where we would be have an instance where anybody was denied any type of insurance coverage because they merely were a victim of domestic violence. And that is the primary intent and thrust of this legislation. In addition, Madam Speaker, there's a second provision in this bill which is really quite interesting. I wish everybody to take note of. It's a provision in the more or less second section of the bill that requires upon written request from an applicant that an insurer must disclose the reason for insurance coverage to be denied. This particular provision applies to all insurance instances and not just the topic covered by the bill. So in a certain sense, this is a twofer bill. And I think it's something that all of your constituents should be aware of, Madam Speaker, because this really is a consumer protection type of a thing. Heretofore, when insurance is denied by any underwriter or carrier, they could, by courtesy, tell you what to do. Now, statutorily, we're requiring an insurance firm to provide the information and the reason for any denial of coverage, which was not heretofore allowable. So this is an excellent piece of legislation in terms of what it can do for the people of the state in that regard. This bill was looked at last year in another form. It was Senate Bill 197 and enjoyed the overwhelming passage in both bodies, Madam Speaker, but it did die in the waning hours of the legislative session. I would say the bill was somewhat more controversial last year because of some other provisions. I would just inform the body that this bill has been rewritten and now enjoys not only the support of the Division of Insurance, but also the insurance carriers of the state of Alaska. It's had, I think, excellent hearings throughout the last 2 years, and is now timed that we also push the button to support those people that may have been victims of domestic violence. Thank you.
Further debate? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I participated in the formation of this bill in years past, and I agree with the person carrying the bill that its original form had some difficulties and they have been corrected. And I think just for the record, I would like to state that the first section of the bill makes it illegal for an insurance company to preclude coverage or deny coverage or cancel coverage or increase rates for the specific and only specific reason that they are a domestic violence victim. It does not preclude doing any of these things for the normal kinds of reasons that insurance companies have the ability to do them.
Representative Elton?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just briefly, I think there are three important things to note, and the representative who's carrying the bill has noted a couple of them, but I just want to reemphasize them because I think they're important. What we're doing here is not anything unusual. It's something that we overwhelmingly did last year. I do think that the bill this year is less controversial and is better, and I applaud both the sponsor of the bill and the committee chair who worked on it. I'd also like to point out that we're not doing something that's unusual. 16 other state jurisdictions have done the same thing. Congress has done the same thing. And reiterate also that we have here a bill that's evolved to the point where insurance carriers, Division of Insurance, and advocates for victims can all agree that this is a good piece of legislation. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Bryce?
2 points that I think, one point that hasn't been raised and another point that was touched upon. It was brought out that this is preemptory legislation to ensure that in the future domestic violence victims are not discriminated against. Is my understanding there have been instances in the lower 48 where that has actually taken place. It is a necessary piece of legislation. But in the discussion with the Labor and Commerce Committee, we started to touch upon an issue that this bill brought up, and that is the question of the ability of a self-insured group to discriminate against domestic violence. This deals specifically with folks who have insurance coverage, Aetna, State Farm, whatever. But I think it's also important, Madam Speaker, that we continue this debate into the area of those entities that might have self-insured policies to ensure that they don't discriminate against our victims of domestic violence as well.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt the Senate Bill 14. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. The Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
39 yeas, 0 nays.
And so Senate Bill 14 passes the House. Representative Veazey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. With permission of the body, can we move back up the calendar and introduction of guests?
Without objection.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I don't often get family in the gallery, and when they do, they seem to want to sit behind the post so I can't see them. But somewhere over there is my son, Russ, who has just returned from Japan. 2 years of duty over there. And, Madam Speaker, the Navy is going to send him to school to learn how to be a politician. They call it mind-sweeping, but that's the same thing. But, and the beaming lady next to him over there is my wife, Jean, if she'd please stand. And I think that Josie's also over there. Members, would please help me welcome them.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down to the calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
CS for Senate Bill 75, State Affairs, by the Senate State Affairs Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Regulation of Accountants and Providing for an Effective Date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass Ryan Hudson and Rokeberg. No recommendation, Caldery and Sanders. The report was signed by Rokeberg Chair CS. I have no amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that CS for SB 75, State Affairs, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for Senate Bill 75, State Affairs, by the Senate State Affairs Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Regulation of Accountants and Providing for an Effective Date.
Under debate, Representative Rokeberg.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill does basically three things. First, it increases the educational requirements for those people who are sitting for the examination to become a certified public accountant. Next, it allows the use of EA or the designation EA for enrolled agent as defined by the Internal Revenue Service. And third, Madam Speaker, it provides for an orderly transition on the changing educational requirements and its impact on the examination given twice a year here in the state of Alaska. The reason for this bill, Madam Speaker, is quite an extraordinary thing. Alaska, because of its lower educational requirements, has become a magnet point for people, particularly offshore people, to come to the state of Alaska and sit for the CPA examination. Madam Speaker, testimony was heard in the Labor and Commerce Committee to the fact as many as 500 to 600 applications are received now biannually in the state of Alaska for people to come here and sit for the examination because of the nature of our educational requirements. This has created an extraordinary burden on the state of Alaska because we only have one examiner that gives these examinations. And when we have, in essence, of over 1,000 people now coming to the state of Alaska to take an examination, it's created quite a burden. In addition, because of the large number of participants in each exam, it's very difficult to proctor the examinations. As a matter of fact, on the record, there is testimony that there may have been, in the last examination, as many as 3 instances of cheating, particularly by a pool of some 30 people. The reason that, and also because of this, Madam Speaker, there's fear by the Board of Accountancy here in the state of Alaska that the eligibility of the state to be able to grant, to give this examination may be in jeopardy by the the American Institute of CPAs or Certified Public Accountants. So therefore, this important area of the commerce of our state may be put in jeopardy because of the poor inability to provide the examination in such a manner that people have confidence in this examination, which is really quite important. As we all know, we need to take care of the bean counters in our society because they look after all of our money. And therefore, we want to make sure that they are qualified individuals, they're individuals that are here to do the business in the state of Alaska, and we're not just, a diploma mill for people, particularly coming from offshore, that wish to have an American Certified Public Accountancy designation with lower educational standards. So this is an important piece of legislation for the commerce of our state. I would ask everybody's support for this legislation.
Further debate? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Senate Bill 75? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
And so Senate Bill 75 passes the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on CS for SB 75 State Affairs be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
There are citations on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us down to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from the call of the House for the following times. Representative Kukesh from noon Thursday, April 17th until 9 a.m. plain time Monday, April 21st. Representative James from 9 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, April 9th.
Without objection, those members will be shown as approved, as excused. Further unfinished business? Announcements? Representative Cott?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. On Wednesday, everybody I think is aware that Bob Ward's funeral will take place at 3 p.m. and we will be providing a van service out to the chapel, and we will plan on leaving around 2 p.m. If those that plan on taking that particular service would touch bases with my office, I'd appreciate it.
Further announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Just one additional piece of information about the funeral. The chapel is the chapel by the lake, considerable ways out the highway.
Committee announcements? Representative Williams?
The House Transportation Committee will meet today at 1:30 to take up House Bill on the Port Authority.
Further committee announcements? Representative Roper?
Speaker, Labor and Commerce will meet at 3:15 today. We'll be taking up the aerospace bill as well as the carryover on the House Bill 207, drug testing, and the omnibus bill. In addition, we will have conversations about whether the Wednesday meeting will be held due to the fire announcement. Thank you.
Further announcements? Representative Cott?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Rules Committee will meet this evening in room 120 at 5 p.m. to take up Senate Bill 115. Disclosure of salmon prices.
Further announcements? Special orders? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I request privilege of the floor to speak on Alaska's energy system. I ask the leave of the body to use names of former legislators in tribute.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Alaska's energy system has enjoyed somewhat of a tortuous future, I think. I'd like to go back to when I first arrived in this body and we had a representative from Petersburg. That representative is now deceased, but he was with a man of vision. I'd like to think of the people that have worked on Alaska's energy system that are no longer with us, people that were bold, had vision, and integrity. Madam Speaker, in the early days when Alaska's energy system was discussed, we had a group in South Central Alaska called Susitna Now. Susitna Now worked to develop Susitna and Watana Dam. The representative from this body, Representative Ernie Haugen from Petersburg, worked to secure funding and the development of Tyee Lake. Madam Speaker, from that was the outgrowth of the plan that we now have in Alaska. Madam Speaker, in 1981, there were two bills, Senate Bill 25 and Senate Bill 26, that resided in the Resources Committee when new leadership took over this House. And that new leadership deemed those two bills to be two of the bills that had to be moved because it was crucial to Alaska's future. Senate Bill 25 and 26 provided for four dams, Tyee, Swan Lake, Solomon Gulch, and Terra Lake. And those four dams were to be built with a $250 million grant from the state of Alaska. And also at that time, we rewrote the program that we now call PCE, Power Cost Equalization. And what did the rest of the state get at that time? They got a clause in the bill that was deemed the blackmail clause. And the blackmail clause said that there would be in the Railbelt Energy account $1 billion by 1990. That was the share for an energy system that was to tie the whole state together. These men of vision, integrity, even though we had little money at that point in time when they began this energy system, knew that the one thing that we as a state must have if we were to progress beyond the third world status was an energy system, a transportation system, and a communication system. And Madam Speaker, the environmentalists fought long and hard against Susitna and Wautauna as the other dams went forward. And as the power cost equalization program went forward and other energy projects in the rural areas of the state, what did not go forward was Susitna and Wautauna. But in 1984, the folks representing the four dams, which we call the four dam pool, came back to this legislature and they said that the folks in the rail belt had to give up something. And what they had to give up was what we call the blackmail clause, because they had huge overruns. At that time, we had Senator Don Bennett, who is now deceased, and Senator Ed Dankworth in the other body, who had been the original sponsors of Senate Bill 25 and 26 and had worked very hard on that legislation. And Madam Speaker, they felt that indeed if we had to give up the blackmail clause for these cost overruns, that the rail belt, where the lion's share of the people reside, should get something. So at that time, Madam Speaker, I was the majority leader, and Senator Jalmar Kurtula was the president of the Senate. And on behalf of the House and on behalf of the Senate, the two of us in the governor's conference room with other members of the House and Senate negotiated a new energy system. And that new energy system was that the rail belt would in fact give up the blackmail clause. We would put up another $200 million for Tyee, Swan Lake, Terra Lake, and Solomon Gulch. And that every year till 1990, the rail belt would get $200 million till we got $1 billion. And that $1 billion was supposed to be spent to develop an energy system for the rail belt and to tie the rail belt together in a long-term system that was affordable, reliable, and cost-effective. Madam Speaker, there were members, including myself, who said if we give up this blackmail clause, all we will ever get is the $200 million. And that was also the year that we made the $150 million appropriation for Bradley Lake, and also increased the amount that we gave to PCE. And Madam Speaker, truer words were never spoken. All the rail belt ever got was $200 million. And Madam Speaker, at this time we have invested in those four dams a little less than $500 million. And Madam Speaker, in PCE and the smaller energy projects in the bush, we have invested a little less than $500 million. That's almost $1 billion, Madam Speaker. And the lion's share of the people in the rail belt, what did they get? $200 million. That money was set aside in an account with a commitment and a promise. The commitment was broke and the promise was broken. And out of that $200 million, $100 million was stolen from the people of the rail belt and went to everything in this state for things other than energy.
And I can stand here on this floor and name you those projects one by one, if need be, because I served on the Finance Committee at the time. And the only one of those projects that you could even consider to be close to energy was the rail cars for the Wishbone Hill Coal Project. That was $9 million. That was the closest we ever came out of that $100 million. So what was left? The $100 million plus the interest off of it, plus the amount of money that was left over in the Susitna-Watonna account, and a few other smaller pots of money like that that was directly related to the rail belt. And when I was Speaker of this body, we wrote a new energy program for Alaska. And that new energy program for Alaska, Madam Speaker, did not just go and we did not just go and look at the needs of the rail belt out of what was left. What we did do was fund 50% of the northern and the southern intertie as a grant. And that was the only grant money, remember, and that was less than $100 million that the rail belt ever got. Madam Speaker, we lent out of the rail belt's money $20 million to build an intertie from Ketchikan to Sitka or Petersburg, or one of those areas in that area to help with the energy needs. We lent it, Madam Speaker. And we lent $35 million to build the Sutton-Glen Allen intertie. Sutton-Glen Allen are not part of the Rail Belt Energy Program. They are part of the Four Dam Pool. They got theirs. Madam Speaker, we also set up a PCE account. And we put into that PCE account, out of rail belt money, $67 million. And Madam Speaker, we set up an income stream from the income coming in from the four down pool. Now remember, they have gotten almost a half a billion dollars from the state. And the income that was coming in was supposed to do two things in the new energy bill, three things. 40% went to pay back the $20 million that had been borrowed for the intertie in Southeast. 40%. But we allowed them to have $4 million a year out of that $11 million income stream also. $4 million a year. They reached $8 million, Madam Speaker, to build and engineer that intertie. But again, we gave them a way to pay back the money to the rail belt that we had lent them. 40% of the interest that's coming in of the $11 million for the interest on the four dams. Madam Speaker, we also said that the $35 million that we were lending to Sutton-Glen Allen would also be paid back. Now, those two pots of money was to go into what we call the Power Development Revolving Loan Fund. And why do we need a Power Development Revolving Loan Fund? We need that, Madam Speaker, because we have places all up and down the rail belt, small communities that have no way to get energy into their communities when we're giving PCE, we've given the four dams and everything else to everybody else in the state. But they operate off of generators. And we have all these small programs. There was another $3 million that we also lent for a Seward to finish out the Seward intertie. That money, Madam Speaker, is owed to the rail belt. Plain and simple. And I'm giving this speech today in case I drop dead tomorrow that somebody around here will know what little the rail belt ever got and what is owed to us. Now, Madam Speaker, we also set up the $67 million for PCE, but we also allowed them to have $40% out of that revenue stream. It's about $4 million a year. And, Madam Speaker, we have put 20% then aside for that Power Development Revolving Loan Fund to pay for some of these small communities in the rail belt that operate off of generators.
seems ultimately fair to me. But then the next thing I know, I find that a member of the other body decides that these four dams ought to be given away to the communities that the four dams are operated in. And the next thing I know, we've got Ada negotiating with those communities to give those dams away from zero. Well, it started out that it was going to give them to them for nothing, except the four dams got, the communities got greedy and wanted them to actually pay them for taking those four dams that we have $500 million in. And then comes along a private source that decides, you know, these are pretty good, it's a pretty good deal. You know, maybe I could put together a community-based and a public base and buy these dams. Well, about that time, these four communities decide to get serious about it, and they decide, well, maybe they might pay up to $20 million. Madam Speaker, do you know how much is owed to the state of Alaska on that last loan, because we made the loan to them? They've never paid a penny of it. All they have ever paid is the interest, and that's where the $11 million come from. $184 million is still owed. And we're going to give them away? I don't think so, Madam Speaker, because that's the money that's supposed to be coming back to the Rail Belt and these other communities to build those energy systems that we so badly need. Now, Madam Speaker, what's fair is fair and what's wrong is wrong. And the men of old that sat in these two bodies when we had no money were men of vision, honor, and integrity. And they sought to help build an energy system for this state that would last for your children, my children, and our grandchildren. And since then, what else have we done? We bought the dam for Juneau as well. And I'm glad that we did, because the federal government has no business owning it. And that will continue to help serve the people of Southeast. But, Madam Speaker, somewhere along the line, I do hope that there are others with vision, integrity, that can understand and see what is needed in this state, and that we should not be so parochial that we take from one community to give to another. I've never done it. And when we wrote the energy bill the last time, we in the Rail Belt didn't do it. We again set up an energy system for the whole state. Let's hope that somewhere along the line, some other people will get vision of what is needed for the long-term energy needs to make this state a state that's self-sufficient, self-sustaining. Because as long as we don't have an energy system that is working, that is affordable, we will continue to lose, like we lost the Medrex plant over at Point McKenzie, because we don't have in the Rail Belt a long-term affordable source of power. Madam Speaker, I ask the members of this body and the other body to work with us with integrity and to keep their word as we have kept ours. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Madam Speaker, permission to speak on the same subject.
Without objection?
Although I wanted to speak on another one today, but I just would like to make, and I'm not prepared like my good friend from District 22, and I know she has a lot longer history than I, but I can tell you that I have vision and I have integrity, but I think that different people have different ways to look at things at times. Before I came down here and served in the legislature, I served on Copper Valley's Board of Electric for 5 years. The very first major vote that I made was voting against the contract with the 4-dam pool, because I believe, and my communities believe, that we were sold a bill of goods that we didn't get. I could show you newspaper articles that said the state of the legislature has authorized grants to build those dams. I could show you politician speeches and brochures that came down there and said, here's what we're going to do for you. But when it ended up and we voted on it, we had to vote to pay a rate higher than people were paying for their whole electricity. In other words, the wholesale rate. It doesn't do any good to have, I don't care how much money you spend where, It doesn't do any good if all you're doing is putting in higher rates to people. People of the Copper Valley pay 21 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, you, they can attract any business into that area. And I stood and I spoke when I first got here at Eureka meetings about exactly what the previous speaker just said, that we should have a statewide grid. Every place that we can should be hooked into an intertie, because I think that's the best way to get our rates down. And where we can't, we should be looking at alternative energy to get people off these expensive diesel generators. But, Madam Speaker, it does no good to say, here's $35 million loan, and then they have to borrow another $15 million to build an intertie from Sutton to Glen Allen that 3,000 consumers are going to have to pay back $50 million. Else it's going to do, and it's scary to everybody out there looking for a way to bring down the rate, but the fear is it's just going to take the rate up higher. I mean, how does 3,000 people pay that? It's very, we can't do it. So, Madam Speaker, I think that people in the rail belt who look and say, we were promised X number of dollars into our communities, should open their eyes a little bit and say, how am I doing right now in electric system? I don't think it was brought up how much was spent on Susitna. Millions and millions, I think over $100 million, nothing ever happened. How much did we put into the coal-fired plant? Not only the state, but the federal government. No, the intertides that were grants. And before that. And then the question you have to ask yourself is, what am I paying for electricity in the rail belt? Do I want to trade places with any place else? That's what we have to look at. Are we making areas so that they have affordable electricity so we can have economic development? That's the question to ask ourselves. Not did I get X number of dollars or did this person get more than I? When the federal government built the dams on the Colorado River, and everybody didn't say that, Arizona didn't say that I get more money than California. What we did was provided electricity, cheap electricity, to a whole huge area, and we opened up a whole part of the country to economic development. That's what we have to do in Alaska. I wasn't prepared to speak on this, but I said enough.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Permission to speak on the same subject, and I will try to keep it very brief. You know, it's kind of interesting that years ago when I was here, when we were talking about energy and hydroelectric power for certain parts of the state of Alaska, and we found that there were some areas that it made economic sense to do so. But in order to get these projects off the ground, a concession had to be made, and that is known as the blackmail clause, and indeed that's exactly what it was. In other words, in order to get these projects online, the projects that met the economic feasibility test, there was tribute had to be paid. And it's kind of interesting that I was riding in an airplane back from Anchorage, and I was sitting behind two gentlemen, the middle seat was empty and I was there, and evidently one was from an engineering firm, and he was saying, and I listened very carefully, yeah, I'm going back, you know, I just came back from the Susitna project thing there. Our firm has a contract up there for about $5 million. The thing's never going to be built. It, you know, it doesn't make much sense, but by gosh, this is our third year that we've been up there, and we'll go up there every year for our $5, $6 million. And I just sat there and listened to the conversation and thought to myself, yes. And the Susitna project, of course, eventually was deemed not particularly feasible. It was not in the best interest, nor would the money be available to, that much money be available to put a project like that on the line. And we've been in this argument ever since about the blackmail clause. And it's very obvious that the gentlemen that were mentioned in the Senate Finance Committee indeed recognized this. And I was part of the negotiations, in particular from the point of view of Sitka. And Sitka, we opted out of the general scheme that was developed and decided to go a different direction. And I'm definitely glad that we did take that other direction. But there was a mention of a former representative from Petersburg. and I knew him well, served with him, and it's kind of interesting. The people in Petersburg still have the same feelings as that representative. They do not like the present proposal of a resolution that soon is going to be submitted before us in finance. Now, Madam Speaker, we're talking about over 44,000 people, Alaskans, who are served by these projects. And is mentioned by the minority leader in relation with the prices that are paid for energy in different places. And believe me, there are a lot of communities, even in the Four Dam Pool, that would be glad to change places with Anchorage and other places on the rail belt. Now, I don't deny that there should be some money in relation with intertidal things, but the power question really is in areas at the point when we're building would had hydropower capacity. Now we should start talking about intertidal and things of that nature. But it is not quite so simple. I agreed with most of the discussion by the starter of the special orders till it came to the very end of it and it started to fall apart. In my mind, well, I hope all of you will look very carefully. Evidently, we're going to have a pretty serious debate on this. There was tribute that was paid and recognition by some others that it wasn't quite proper and that other things should be used with that money. There have been several occasions when we were in the budget process that the Susitna money was actually used as the backup plan for the budget should there be a revenue shortfall. Now we use the Constitutional Budget Reserve and try to put a straw in there, but for a while that was our backup, was the Susitna monies, as that started to then be properly used in places that were economically feasible to provide power for the citizens of Alaska. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Croft?
Madam Speaker, may we move back up to introduction of guests?
Without objection.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Piratrovich Gallery, a friend of mine, a constituent, almost a tenant, down for the Alaska Food Coalition, the head of Beans Cafe, George Hieronymus.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Rice?
Not guest, special orders.
Special orders.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request the permission of the body to discuss the passing of an Alaskan legend.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Madam Speaker, it's with great sadness that I bring to the body's attention the passing of not only an Alaskan legend, but an Alaskan hero. Jim Dugan passed away in Fairbanks Friday evening. For those of you who are not aware of who Jim was, you might see, I believe it's his son who writes the column in the Anchorage Daily News. But he was also known for his participation at the state's constitutional convention back in the 50s up in Fairbanks. But I think more recently he's been known to any UAF alumnus or any person who participated in the Tanana Valley State Fair. He was the fellow that basically close to 50 years ran the UAF alumni's hamburger booth. He has been a landmark to not only Fairbanks but to Alaska, and Madam Speaker, he'll be sorely missed.
Further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. With your permission, just one comment. I hope it's not an indication of the future, but I think that's the first time that I've heard a special order presentation from a member from Sitka without an animal analogy, and I missed it. Having said that, Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday.
Adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Never got the top.